Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Can you join us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if I can get a motion, subject to any amendment, to approve the minutes for our regular meeting of March 15th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then similarly for April 4th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And if there's no objection, as much as I know you'd love to hear our financial report, we thought we would take the swearing in of our new officers. That's okay. And with that, if Chief, you want to do an introduction, Brian?
Yeah. Chief, come on up.
All right. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Thank you. What a great day for Cleveland Metro Parks. The weather is fantastic. Got a nice attendance here in the boardroom. For me personally, there's two fantastic moments in a chief's career. Number one is being able to swear in new officers and bring them to a fantastic organization, such as the Cleveland Metro Parks Police Department. And the second one is to promote an officer from patrolman to sergeant. And I am blessed today to be able to do both of those. Thank you to Brian and the commissioners and our great leadership team that we have in place here. This is a great day for us, and I can't thank everybody enough globally and personally for attending, because this is fantastic. So with that, we're going to bring three new officers. I just want to introduce each one briefly. Ivan Huff. Ivan comes from the Elyria Police Department and in Oberlin. Dan Fedor comes to us from the Cleveland Police Department, and James Jacobs comes to us from John Carroll University Police. So that's it. This is not about me. It's about them and about Luis Santiago, who's making sergeant today. So I'll turn it over to you, Bruce.
Gentlemen, come on down.
Appreciate that.
If you want to raise your right hand, repeat after me. I do solemnly swear, that I will support the Constitution, the laws of the United States of America, the Constitution and laws of the state of Ohio, the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks, and I will discharge the duties to the best of my ability, of the office of officer to which I've been appointed, I will faithfully carry out and implement, the policies enunciated, and the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners. Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District. This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God. Wait, pass the test.
As they're finishing up, I'd like them to introduce their families who they brought with them today. Daniel did come from us from, again, the Cleveland Police Academy. He was also, prior to that, he was working as a paramedic for the Metro Health System. Ivan was with the Elyria Police Department and a part-time officer for the Oberlin Police Department. He graduated from Walsh University with a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology. He completed his peace officer training at the Lorain Community College. Officer Jacobs comes to us after having been a member of the John Carroll Police Department since 2021. You can go first. Introduce your family that came with you. Thank you.
Together for
year and a half, 2 years.
Welcome.
My mom, Lisa, and my dad.
Welcome.
Chief. Country.
Do you want to do the resolution for these three, or do you want to do?
I'm sorry. Yeah, let's do a resolution. Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Sorry.
That's all right. We'll do the swearing in of the sergeant.
Luis Santiago, please come on forward. Great day for Luis, going from patrolman to sergeant. Luis is presently assigned to the DEA task force. So he will be leaving that here May 1st and coming to his new role as a sergeant in the patrol division. So Luis, I can't say enough about Luis. He's a fantastic, fantastic person, fantastic patrolman, going to make an outstanding sergeant. And he does one heck of an outstanding job for the DEA. So welcome to your new position. It's going to be great. All right. No, my pleasure.
Raise your right hand. Repeat after me.
I, Luis Santiago, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And laws of the United States of America.
And laws of the United States of America.
The Constitution and laws of the State of Ohio.
The Constitution and laws of the State of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And the rules and regulations of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties of office of sergeant.
And I will discharge the duties of the office of sergeant.
To which I've been appointed.
To which I have been appointed.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
I will faithfully carry out and implement.
Policies enunciated.
The policies enunciated.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
And the instructions given to me by the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do, as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do, as I shall answer unto God.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Not done yet.
Oh. So this is my pastor. He's leading chat with the radio. It's an honor to have him here. Then I have my mom over there, my wife. Steve Shock, he's a friend of mine, considering a friend, he's from DEA, special agent. And then my brother, blessed to have him here, he's also a police officer. He used to be with Cleveland, now he's with West Cleveland.
Very nice.
So,
you do have to sign. Recommended action falls on the top of page 10 to appoint Luis A. Santiago to full-time police sergeant for the Cleveland Metro Parks.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And with that, our financial report.
Congrats.
One moment.
Yeah, give time to.
Yeah.
I know you all want to stay for the financial.
Thank you. Congrats.
Like, oh,
that time you got me, I think I was maybe four. We're down and walking on the beach. College kids are playing some volleyball, and you know, a few of them say, "Hey, we'll just." Yeah, it wasn't free, sir.
Sir,
never mind.
Michael, that's very sweet.
Yeah, just
Michael.
Man, I'm shocked.
Quite.
Wade, you had all that time to prepare.
And Sean was probably done.
It's gone.
Okay, great. I'm sorry, jump forward. Apologize. Okay, month of March, not a lot. See my point, no, this is, oh, sorry.
Love that picture.
There we go. Okay, a couple of things I wanted to point out at a park-wide level. This is our property taxes. First half collection is settled out. You can see the difference the levies made. That's how much more we have this year in the first half as compared to last year, $12.6 million, which is a key driver. We're up in the first 6 months of, I'm sorry, the first 3 months of 23, almost $16 million. So it's not all property tax. You can see that on the local government side, gifts and grants.
We're up, I'm sorry, my mic was off. We're up $2 million there. Charges for services, and we're going to go into more detail on these as we flip through. I highlighted this because right away someone would go, wow, we're payroll $3.7 million over where we were last year. Is that a concern? Absolutely not. That's because we had three payrolls in March this year. We will have three payrolls in April. We had three payrolls in April last year. So what I'm going to do for the board is do a deeper dive when we're 4 months in, because everything will align. We'll have the exact number of payrolls in through the first 4 months or the first third of the year. And we're going to talk about capital a little bit later, but this is all the work primarily going on at the zoo, and you'll see in the next page. The zoo, as I just mentioned right there, you can see the big expenditure in capital, and it's primarily bears and the finish and the completion of the admin building. So it's coming out of restricted funds, but it's $3 million, which is a big driver. 3 months in, even though when you look at March, revenues were down a little bit compared to March of last year, and you're going to see the same thing in golf. And I must compliment Damian Crosby, who's our golf manager, because he pointed out exactly how bad the weather was in March by, you know, noting exactly how many rain days and what the temperature was, which was colder than last year. That affected the zoo also. But year to date, up $143,000 in total revenues, primarily driven by admissions, which were good. And then the Zoo Society, this is perfectly aligned. They've made all their payments consistent now, and we're about $82,000 higher through the first quarter. So Zoo Society memberships are good. Zoo's in a good spot. Not a lot more to say other than construction's moving along well there. I mentioned golf. Again, you can see March of 23 was not as good. Damien really dug in and found out that a lot of it was driven by weather. But year to date, $70,000 up. You can tell by that number there, the $165,000, how good January and February had to be based on the $71,000. And golf is up $162,000, almost $163,000 year to date, 3 months compared to where it was last year. We've got some construction going on down at the zoo also, and that's going to be at Manakiki and Seneca, which we've talked about Manakiki before, and Seneca are where the golf course equipment is being expensed, as well as where the construction is being expensed through the first 3 months. I'm sorry. Individual golf courses. A couple of things I wanted to point out in the individual golf courses. There are two in green, and it's Sleepy and Seneca. They're the two that year to date through the first 3 months are doing better in 23 than they were in 22, even though they might be running at a slight negative. So the other courses are all lagging their first 3 months a little bit, but often you hear me talk about the nine-hole courses, how well they do. They're lagging a little bit now. My sense is they'll catch up once the weather breaks. March being a tough weather month, I assume a lot of golfers don't play. These are more of the casual golfers, and they're not going to golf when the weather's bad, but your what I would call more hardcore golfers are still going to be out there. So Sleepy and Seneca did really well, and you can see we'd mentioned the capital that's being spent at Manakiki right there, and then at Sleepy. But golf is doing well. No reason for concern at this point. We'll see what April brings. The weather's getting better, and it's really just avoiding rain on Saturdays is the whole driver in golf and how they do. Enterprise. The big story here is year-to-date revenue, $1.3 million compared to just over $1 million last year. So revenue's up, and we're going to look at some of the big drivers there, and one of them is Merwin's. But so you can see the differential is $242,000. You can see our year-to-date net operating surplus is $286,000 from Enterprise. So Enterprise is doing well compared to the previous year. We're doing better. And we'll talk about what some of the drivers are right now.
So does Merwin's roll up into concessions then?
Yes, it does.
Seems like.
Nice. There we go. And there's Merwin's right there. You can see it still has a slight loss, but look at the difference in revenue from 3 months in 22 to 3 months in 23. And as the weather warms up, we get more business there. That's going to turn the corner. And East 55th just doing really well. I mean, it always does well. It was net for almost 400,000 last year through 3 months. This year, it's net almost 450,000 through 3 months. And then the other couple things I wanted to point out, and the chalet always does well, but I think it's important that I share with you everything that we're thinking about in finance. You can see it's lagging a little bit what it did last year, even though it's dropping 42 grand to the bottom line. Part of its operating expenses, some that were front loaded, but I've asked the staff to dig in a little bit more. I know it's only $18,000 and it's making money, but the chalet is just a consistent money maker. Just make sure we're not missing something there. And then parking just gets better. We've added some additional parking spots now down by the stadium. So that's going to, and I know that we had a good opening day for baseball. And so this number could probably be even better. But when you can drop $87,000 to the bottom line through the first quarter, that's excellent. It helps fund so much more of what we do. Everything else is running pretty consistent, or it's not even up and going yet. So there's not a lot to share. And that's all we had. Finance is pretty straightforward. Nothing of concern. I would close by saying we're in the midst of our audit. Our auditors were in this week, and we're on schedule to be coming back with our audit report at the May meeting. And the auditors will have their audit committee and they'll talk with you. But at this point, there have been no concerns raised, no problems at all with the audits. We're moving along there fine.
Great.
Any questions?
No.
Okay.
Okay, Brian.
We will move into new business. With us this morning, we have two of our three retiring guests with us. The very first one is Jeff DeLuca. Chris? Can you get the lights, please? Yeah, come on.
Morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
It's my pleasure to introduce you today, Jeff DeLuca. I've known Jeff a long time. And Jeff has been a man of many hats with the Metro Parks over the years. He's had a variety of different positions in zoo horticulture, which is where I knew Jeff, going back to the early days of the rainforest. I spent some time as a manager in park operations and came back to the zoo to finish his career. I've always been impressed by what Jeff's been able to do for us, not only in terms of his skill as a horticulturalist, but his willingness to train other staff members. And I think maybe all you need to know about Jeff DeLuca is that knowing that he was going to retire when we were requesting volunteers to work for the levee, Jeff was at the very front of the line. Jeff volunteered multiple times. And I think that just shows his commitment to the Metro Parks, because he knew that he wasn't going to, you know, work out the next 10 years of this levee cycle. But it meant a lot to him. And Jeff's been a wonderful employee and friend. So congratulations, Jeff.
Yeah. It's a dance.
You know what I find interesting is, you know, reading through this, I think you only miss golf and maybe my job. maybe there's something left for you. I don't know. We also have Volunteer Appreciation Week going on. And Jeff does volunteer. Jeff has spent time in Richfield, and he is a true professional and gentleman. We will definitely miss you.
Yeah.
So on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to recognize you for your more than 37 years with Cleveland Metro Parks. Wow. We're glad to see you finish.
Thank you.
Like to thank the board and Cleveland Metro Parks and all the support that they've given me over the years. And I've grown into this position. I've been here since I was 16. So I've seen so many directors and so many people, and I'm friends with so many people outside of here. And I want to thank the community for supporting us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Go catch some fish.
Yeah.
The next retiree we want to recognize is Pamela A. Krentz. Animal Registrar.
So this is more bittersweet than most of our retirees. Pam would have been retiring in late fall. She had a sudden terrible turn of events in her health, and Pam passed away late fall or early winter this past year. My first job at the zoo was I had a little desk outside of Pam Krentz's office. And I at the time, I didn't realize that not every curator got yelled at by the registrar like our curators got yelled at by Pam Krentz. Pam was incredible at her job. She had an incredible attention to detail. She and I bonded early on in my time here because I was doing a project and found a record where an animal was father to 8 animals and mother to 9 animals,
which pretty cool.
About made Pam's head explode. She spent the early part of her career professionalizing our zoo. She was our first registrar. She was one of the first registrars in the profession. And as any indication of who Pam was as a person, she had a celebration of life early this fall, and there were 4 or 5 registrars from around the country who came in to, who drove in to recognize Pam. She was a leader both here, but within the Registrar Association. So she will be missed.
Recognizing Pam's more than 50 years in the profession, when I first came here in 2010, you find important people right away, right? Payroll is one, making sure everybody gets paid. And two, on that list would have been Pam Krentz. And why it's so important is because she literally had her pulse on and finger on all things the zoo. So as much as Steve Taylor was in charge, Pam Krentz was really in charge of the zoo. And I love the fact that she developed the ZIMS program, very personal. It's called the Zoo Information Management System. But she will be truly missed. She was a true professional. We do want to recognize her on behalf of the Park Commissioners, Anthony J. Russo, for her 33 years of dedicated service to Cleveland Metro Park. So let's give her one more round of applause. Also this morning, we would like to recognize Mary Ann Lyons, desktop support technician. David?
So, nice to see you again. And so everybody knows Mary Ann from all the work that she did, and everybody knows what a great customer service rep she is. So I was thinking about, you know, how to introduce her, and I realized not everybody probably knows about her, you know, darker past. You know? So, I mean, I could tell them about at least one rowdy incident from your youth, the rambunctious run-ins with the Rangers at Rocky River Reservation.
Very good, literally.
So I won't reveal all the outrageous details of raging bonfires and your daring escape on 2 wheels. Suffice it to say that lucky for us, Mary Ann decided that a life of crime and excessive alliteration was not for her. So she went on to get a degree in engineering at a time when it was even less common for women to go into STEM careers. So early on, started with hands-on experience in design and manufacturing. Went on to all girls Catholic school in the area and started getting into technology there, and quickly became proficient and decided to look for a greater challenge. Went on to one of the most well-known media organizations in the area, IdeaStream. Worked there for a long time, and then thankfully found the Metro Parks and made that her last career home. So when I started, she had already been here a few years and had been doing really her job and my predecessor's job to a large extent, and she helped me get oriented, really you know, mentored me and showed me the ropes, got me used to all the different weird systems that we have to support here. And then asked, you know, when Juro came on full time, if she could start coaching and mentoring. And I thought, heck yeah, you did such a great job getting me oriented, please do. And so also with subsequent staff like Noah, she just really stepped into that role well, in addition to all her great customer support, just being an exemplary member of our team and leading that. So it was great working with you. And I really am honored to have done so. Enjoyed all the conversations that we had that even weren't about work. And so. Now's your chance. I hope you're having a great retirement. Thank you.
Your turn.
This is going to be hard. I'm really shy. I want to thank Brian and thank the board very much. A little over 10 years ago, I was welcomed at a board meeting. And at that time, I said I felt like I was coming home to the place that I belonged, because I was raised in Lakewood and spent my whole life in the metro parks. But little did I know that I would get so much more from my experience working here than I was giving, because this did feel like home. I appreciated the culture. I felt safe. I felt respected. And I was challenged every day. And it was a joy. And the people that work here are a joy to work with, because they love their job and they work hard at their job. So I gained so much more than I gave, and I really appreciate it. And I wish everybody well. And I look forward to seeing the great things that happen.
It is my pleasure to recognize you on behalf of Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, all of the staff that you've said hello to along the way in your last 10 years. Rose did remind me the statute of limitations is up on anything that you may have done. There's still time. Having said that, congratulations.
Thanks.
The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 11, recognizing Jeffrey A. DeLuca, Pamela A. Krentz, and Marianne Lyons for their years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is 2023 budget adjustment number four. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, I would ask your approval for budget adjustment number four. It appears on page 11. It totals $1,448,366. The details of that are on pages 52 through 55. I would point out one large item you'll note. There's an adjustment for $622,800. It increases appropriations for CHEERS. This is restricted monies that we're just now making available to be spent as it relates to something due to CHEERS. It's not a new spend. This is restricted money that we have to allocate for CHEERS. So that's the largest item that you'll be adjusting.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
As Bruce noted, we did not have snow today, but having said that, we are preparing for 2023-2024 road salt resolution. We continue to work through Ohio Department of Transportation for their winter road salt contract 08018-24, contract for road salt. We were looking at lowest and best, and an estimated of 1,000 tons of salt. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 12 to enter into the agreement.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is increase for automotive fluids, lubricants, and at various location. This is an additional consumption, mostly due to cost increases across the board. It was an original consumption of 50. We're asking for the estimated of 20 more. Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 13 to authorize the increase for automotive fluids, lubricants, as presented above.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is increase for propane, same type of scenario. Board saw this back in 2022. We need an additional consumption estimate of $30,000 to finish it out. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 13.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
On page 14, Club Metro 2023 financial request. Club Metro continues to provide wonderful opportunities for our employees to engage at all different types of levels, whether it be at the Cleveland Food Bank, tree planting, summer picnics, holidays, an opportunity for our staff to meet and mingle with each other on many different levels. Charlie Rossell has done a fantastic job. They have looked at the audit and everything is in order. They are asking again for the authorization to match the funds that come in from membership dues and fees in the amount of $6,500. Recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 14.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is authorization for Cleveland Metro Parks Police Department to enter into an intergovernmental cooperative mutual aid agreement. This continues the work that we've been doing across all municipalities in Cuyahoga County and surrounding communities. This is with the Village of Newburgh Heights to share operations through providing safe and secure environments through the village and through the park district. We've seen this before with others. This is on the top portion of page 15 to authorize Cleveland Metro Parks to enter into the intergovernmental cooperative and mutual aid agreement with the Village of Newburgh Heights.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Cuyahoga County Brownfield Remediation Program, demolition and remediation of the Wyrus Aluminum Foundry. This is a resolution to an accept a forgivable loan. Cleveland Metro Parks back in 2021 authorized the purchase of the 0.9-acre Wyrus Aluminum Foundry on 3700 Wildlife Way. We have continued to work through all of the subsequent assessments that needed to transpire. This is all part of the sesquicentennial plan, the Zoo 150 for the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. We will continue to work forward towards the remediation and demolition. Total revised amount is $1.5 million. This is the resolution to enter into a forgivable loan agreement and the funding assistance with Cuyahoga County. The recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 16 to enter into that resolution.
Brian, can I ask one question? How does it get forgiven, the loan, if we live up to the remediation?
Yeah, correct. We have to meet all the different standards and we have to file the report back with the county that we have cleaned and remediated all of the affected areas, and it'll essentially become the construction laydown areas for the next portions of the construction at the zoo.
And so what that is, that the Department of Development and the Cuyahoga County?
I believe it's just through the county. I don't know that it's coming through any subcommittee or sub, but it's just a direct agreement with the county.
Industry.
And the Department of Development State. I get it. Thank you.
The forgivable loan part the county is requiring. It actually was easier to get the 1.1 from the state.
Okay, so that's a grant. The county's a loan. I got you. Thank you.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is a professional services agreement, RFQ 6701, professional consulting services for Cleveland Metro Parks construction inspections. This is for the Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 1. Cleveland Metro Parks did do an RFQ. We did the response and the analysis. We shortlisted three firms. We came to the conclusion that the analysis vetted out QCI to perform the professional inspections for the Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 1. This is a federally funded LPA administered for, again, the Euclid Creek Reservation. The recommended action falls in the mid portion of page 18 to enter into the contract, the professional services agreement with Quality Control Inspections.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next, Euclid Creek Reservation, Euclid Creek Greenway Trail, authorization of a grant submittal to Clean Ohio Trails Fund. Cleveland Metro Parks continues to work to be successful in the space of grants and other types of donations to further projects along the way. This is a multi-phased project, including.
Excuse me, can we see the maps?
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry.
I think it's right behind
you. It is.
David was all over it. Again, these are all different types of phasing. Sean, do you want to just give a quick breakdown just to make sure that we have all of the different components tied together? Again, this is a very unique and complex opportunity. We had originally looked at going nearer the Euclid Creek along the way. However, that was deemed to have many, many challenges along the way. So it has been determined to come down Chardon.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you, Brian. And Sarah and I have been working on this for quite some time. So today we are under construction on phase 1, bringing us from the intersection of Euclid Creek Parkway and Highland up to Euclid. Phase two is under design and will be under construction by the end of the year. And what's in front of you right now is a request to submit the grant application for the Clean Ohio Trails program for a portion of the costs relative to phase three. Phase three already has some federal money in it with the congestion mitigation and air quality money. The 300+ odd thousand that we're requesting from Clean Ohio would then add on top of the Clean Ohio funds, and then Cleveland Metro Parks would put in the balance for this portion of phase three. Phase three and phase four also are part of the RAISE grant that we've received, which will help us both affix alignment and then bring the planning forward for phase three as well.
Sean, could you explain one more time the reluctance to follow the river?
Yes, so absolutely. So we had analyzed the potential to follow Euclid Creek, and there are some challenges there, two really big challenges. One is Cleveland Water Department and the Nottingham Station here, with the fact that there are specific homeland security concerns and requirements. But quite honestly, the biggest one is the railroad track here, the CSX tracks. The where Euclid Creek goes under the railroad tracks is very constrained. It is a tight culvert, and we would have to do millions upon millions of dollars of work to get under or over.
I see.
How do we cross the railroad then?
So we will cross the railroad at grade, okay, on Chardon here. And it's
good. And is it an off trail path that's two way, or is it on either side of Chardon Road?
Great question. It is a multi-use path on the west side of Chardon. So it is a segregated standalone path.
So that crossing of the railroad will be a separate path adjacent to the road?
It will. What we need to determine on that yet, because we're not quite at that design stage, is, you know, will it have its separate little cute mini gates, or will it have the, you know, will it work with the big gate? And we're doing something similar on the Richmond Road connector right now too, in Glen Willow. So we'll have lots of experience with the railroad coming up on these
cars. Like 40 Thanks. Trips a day along there, aren't there?
Yes, tracks. That those tracks see some traffic.
Yeah.
Sean.
St. Clair. Just an idea of where, even though that's four, not three.
Yes. So north of St. Clair, we're looking at a route that brings us basically over to Nottingham and then up the Euclid Creek on the west side of the creek. And that is what the RAISE grant will help us absolutely define.
Okay.
So actually within the next, at the next board meeting, we'll be bringing forward a recommendation to bring the consultant on through those grant funds to start determining that exact answer.
Thanks.
Gotcha.
Thanks.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, thanks.
The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 20 to agree to and submit an application to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, the Clean Ohio Trails Fund, in the amount of $385,500.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next, contract amendment 1687, Cleveland Metro Parks Huntington Playhouse renovation. This is the GMP1. Cleveland Metro Parks has continued to partner with Bay Arts to continue to enhance and improve the overall campus feel. This is relative to the Huntington Playhouse renovation. They've continued to raise significant funds. This work will be performed by Regency Construction. Again, this is the GMP1, anticipates a May 15th project commencement with work all the way through September of 23. Again, we have worked very hard to monitor supply chain challenges and continuing to update the partnership and the fundraising activities. This recommended action falls in the top portion of page 22 for GMP1 with Regency Construction.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next, contract amendment number 2-1543, Cleveland Metro Parks Zoo Construction Manager at Risk for the Gorilla Primate Rainforest Edition. This is the GMP1. We awarded the original, advertised the request for qualifications back in 2020. Higley Construction continues to work forward with us on the demolition drawings, hazardous abatement, and all of the other components relative to the opportunity to continue the work that we need to do to create the laydown areas and clean the various parts of the zoo around. Again, their construction schedule proposed anticipates a May 1 project commencement, which is just right around the corner, and a finish around May 26. The GMP falls in the mid portion of page 23 with the Albert M. Higley Company for the GMP1.
Brian, one question here. What was the estimate total cost of the gorilla building?
The overall, that's a great question. There this will be a continuation of GMP's all stack. So the original was to partner with us and Van Aken, Auken, and others to actually start to bring all the design components. So Dr. Chris Kuhar, Sean, and the entire teams have been working diligently for well over a year. So it will get phased in over time. The project cost will be close to or exceeding $100 million by the time we're all done over the period of next 3 to 5 years. This includes the wireless demolition. It creates a new front entrance opportunity, the cross-country mortgage access, the road behind the rainforest. So this is going to be one of the most complex projects we've ever done in the Cleveland Metro Parks history. But what it really does is takes the rainforest, reorientates the front entrance, and actually brings that into the zoo. It creates probably one of the areas of concern has been always driving through our front entrance, and we'll be rerouting that behind the rainforest to have a more seamless transition. We'll be rerouting the flow of traffic. This accomplishes so many different things, but it is going to be a very multi-layered, very patient process as we're working through all of this.
But $100 million is a major bite for the zoo, isn't it?
It is their, it will be their largest in its 141st year, correct?
And for the naming opportunity at the zoo, is much, have we done very much fundraising for the gorilla itself?
We have, and we continue to, and we've got a number of different conversation and asks out in the community with our partners at the Zoological Society. They continue to raise their portion historically. It has been a 50-50 split. However, I think Cleveland Metro Parks will bring a little bit more funds because we have so much utility and groundwork to do to continue to advance some of these projects. We're also currently in the process of replacing the rainforest roof. We've got a $7+ million at Susie's Bear Hollow. We just finished the $3 million addition with the Jack Joseph and Mort Mandel auditorium. So we continue to be very additive along the way as we're building into the largest capital project.
Thanks, that's great.
Very comprehensive.
Yeah.
Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 23.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is Garfield Boulevard Trail and Green Infrastructure Project. This is a project development agreement. It is, by way of background, the City of Garfield Heights, Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works, Cuyahoga County Planning Commission. There will be others that could include or probably will include the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. This has been clearly defined as one of the more priority links. When we look at the work that the towpath has created, the spines that come off of it, the work going up Warner Hill Trail Connector, this will actually connect Garfield Heights into our big regional system. That is the area of study that is sitting right there in the box. This is, again, a professional development agreement to provide assistance to the communities. It's always nice when you're invited into the communities and they want to work with you. And not only that, but providing funding and opportunities to connect their community. So this is the first phase of it as we're working forward towards finding funds through the American Rescue Act from Cuyahoga County, Ohio. Clean Ohio Trails funds through the Department of Natural Resources, Green Infrastructure Grant through NEOSD, NEORSD, and other contributions from the county and Garfield Heights, as well as Cleveland Metro Parks, to clearly connect this very critical link here within our great county.
And just a question, this is to go down the center of the boulevard, correct?
Actually, Sean's going to come up because I don't know that that's quite true. I think it actually may be a side trail. I don't know that has it been decided? Sarah?
So Sarah and I have been working on this one for some time as well. We're looking on the north side of the roadway. So for as a request from the Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works, who actually started this project, and the City of Garfield Heights, they really wanted to see it on the north side.
Nice.
And we will have a great facility when we all work together.
One of
done.
These days.
Yeah. It's actually really unique to go on that side versus taking it down the middle. You know, we're still in the snow belt, and we still have those issues of plowing and safety and other things, but then the green infrastructure can be put into it. So great question. Yeah. Recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 24.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is amendment number 3, contract 1541, professional services agreement. This is for the gorilla primate Rainforest Edition. This is for construction document development for site design and interpretive. This is with Van Auken Akins Architects LLC. Again, this is amendment number 3. There are a number of components and complexities that will be tied into this proposal of the next phase of design and preparation of construction documents to continue to further all of the work that we need to do to tie together this wonderful package that we're bringing forward for the community. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 26 to enter into amendment number 3 with RFQ 6482.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next one on page 27, top of, is the resolution and local project administration LPA agreement for 2024-2025 for the Biennium Roadway Improvement Projects between Joe, Jim, and a host of our park managers, continuing to look at opportunities of funding. This continues to be an allotment that does come to the park districts from the state through the LPA agreement with ODOT. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 27 for our allotment, which is approximately $540,000 from the state allocation.
Terrific. Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next on page 28 is the authorization of the following awards. I will not go through all of them, but that they are on page 28. They include drainage, telehandlers, nature-based place space, which you'll get to hear about today, employee screening and assessment, and benefits consulting services.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Cheers.
Vouchers and payroll. I just had to flip my map over. Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, I would ask your approval of resolution 23-04-056. It's on page 45. It totals $12,100,282.48 for vouchers, payroll, and wires that were executed in the month of March.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The other resolution, commissioners, I would ask your approval is resolution 23-04-057. This is for payment to Arborware in the amount of $918.79.
I'll abstain here.
Move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
And now we turn to our public comments. Marty.
Marty.
Morning.
Trees have been bulldozed for Rozepka's Auburn Valley development now that Metric Parks has upped the value of his lots. So much for protecting tree cover. This after Metro Parks allowed Brickman free reign to cut trees overlooking Rocky River Reservation, ignoring restrictions dating back to Stinchcomb himself. Brickman's condos are likely contributing to the sloughing of the slope below. All in all, the double standard compared to Irish Town Band. These various developers buy land to make money. Whether that is right or wrong depends on what Metro Parks wants. Was it imminent collapse of the Irish Town hillside or looming collapse of the funding? More beneficial than a hillside park would be to use your clout and get the $60 million, which is going to build a pricey land bridge for Haslam's lakefront development, and redirect it instead to addressing lead poisoning, affordable housing, education, and crime in Cleveland. Connecting downtown trails or the lakefront won't fix any of those problems, which are causing families to continue to flee if they can. Mitigating those issues would also make patrolling and protecting the lakefront less costly. Tony or Bobby George's behavior may be despicable, but they were fighting to profit from land they purchased for that purpose. His bad behavior doesn't justify a double standard on your part. Metro Parks itself, acting like a private developer, has purchased downtown parcels, which they are now inviting private industry to utilize. All suggestions except parking will be considered, because parking is Metro Parks' new money-making concept. And though it generates revenue, the $3 million cost of one parcel can't be ignored. Nature trails are not only the most popular of Metro Parks offering They are also the one thing that has no private competition and does not siphon money away from private enterprise. Paths and natural areas are especially appreciated and known to provide more health benefits than paved city APTs. Focus on these attractions and leave development to commercial interests. Thank you.
Do we have anyone else? Yes.
Sorry, I only have one.
It's fine.
My name is James Otterbury. I'm here with my wife, Yvonne Otterbury. And we'd like to talk about the Berea Quarry. And obviously, you know the history of it. It was formed in 1840 after it was discovered by the John Baldwin that the Rocky River had exposed the sandstone of the highest quality, sandstone that is used on the Hope Memorial Bridge for the Guardians, Ohio Capitol, and many other projects, the Cleveland Courthouse. And it was in a business for 100 years. And in the 1930s, it was about to close, and it was at first deemed over to the city of Berea, who agreed to turn it over to the Cleveland Metropolitan Park. And after a number of problems with the city of Berea, the Berea Stone Company then gave it directly to the park. The WPA came in and helped clean up a lot of the former stone, and built the bridge that's over Baldwin Lake right now. And that brings us up to the present time. You want to go to page one is another picture of the quarry as it stood in the 1880s. The next page was from the Plain Dealer on January 11th, talking about the four people who lost their lives over the last 2 years at Wallace Lake. due for a follow-up with Cleveland.com in May, after I get information back from those people that I requested. Including, and I'll pass the next page and we'll come back to it. Michael Gallagher, County Commissioner for that area. Tom Patton, 17th House District, who wrote to Brian Zimmerman, and also Michael Gallagher, who wrote to the Metro Parks. And last, the Fishing Foundation. Fishing Foundation is a foundation that works with disadvantaged groups and church groups and offers them to take their children fishing, buy them the necessary fishing equipment and teach them how to fish. Then they take them along the banks of local lakes. When my son passed away on the 16th of October at Wallace Lake, we set up a fund through the Fishing Foundation, and we raised $3,400, which is a third of the budget for the Fishing Foundation. I want to go back to the page from the Berea Fire Department and note that there is an issue at Wallace Lake. And on the west side of Wallace Lake, it goes along the hills of the backyards of people. Those were originally where the railroad tracks were that would make the sandstone, cut the sandstone out. And because of that, it's very difficult for rescue people to get to it. It says right in here that the officer, after donning his Mustang suit, had to swim 5 to 6 minutes to traverse the entire width of the lake due to increased buoyancy of the Mustang suits. To make a very simple thing about it, the west side of it is all against houses and a very deep hill. In fact, when they got my son out, they had to put a board on it, and then they had to traverse all the paths to get to the squad. As a boater for 40 years on Lake Erie and the Atlantic Ocean, I'm requesting that you look into the idea of when you're remodeling your buildings there next year, that you look into a boathouse that would be available to both the Berea Fire Department. Their boat, they moved to Strongsville because they needed parking for their firemen. So it's really unavailable for Berea anymore. As a sidebar, the Berea mayor is the only mayor and the only person on my list that will not call me back. And in fact, you can see this report is redacted. I do have the original reports though. There will be a follow-up in late May after I've gotten all the answers of what people are gonna do with cleveland.com. They've agreed to do that. Because my response was from my editorial in this article was very positive, as you can see. And I could have added more. I don't want to beat up anybody. I'm not here to blame anybody for my son's desk. I am here because somebody lost their husband and father and two of their children before that. And I do believe there are issues because it's a former quarry. There's depth changes due to the depth of it. It goes as deep as 35 feet from 4 to 5 feet. And this needs to be addressed. Number one, and if you turn to the page of your signage, which should be the second last page. Being in as a marketing major at Ball and Wallace College and a user of Wallace Lake for 40 years, and my wife as a biker that bikes the whole west side of the trails. We love the metro parks. We think Ryan's done a good job of expanding downtown, although we don't really go that far. But I think more importantly, we have to look at the safety. And whether it's a boathouse with emergency people that are able to use it. When my son was going under, there were people calling. The Metro Parks police did a wonderful job trying to go in there, but the temperature of the water in the deeper areas are much colder, and it was 57 degrees. And he died of hypothermia. And we need to make better awareness of that. And I gave you a picture of one of your sign apparatuses, fishing regulations, a warning about some kind of plant, and then would look like a sign that would be on Lake Erie, swim at your own risk. Well, I wouldn't invite people to swim at their own risk. I would say there's a risk at all of going in there. I don't know when it drops off. I do know in 2018, I looked at the videos of when you drain the lake to do work at the beach. You really drained only about 6 or 7 feet, I believe, from the video. I think there could be a lot more done with not a lot of money, but I think just as we talked this morning about the interactions between the Metro Parks Police, which God love them, they went in that water, cold as it was, and were forced back out. There were people watching him. Individuals tried to go in there. They came back out, and it wasn't to the people put on the Mustang suits that they were able to go in there. But as you say, they had to travel all the way. They had to swim all the way across the lake, the width of the lake, to get to them. So it would behoove you to look into a floating apparatus and give your people better access, because as you know, you've got Ranger Lake out there. I mean, you, I'm sure, have lakes all over. And I'd like to see that as something that the board would look into, to give your people, who are normally the first people that respond and did respond that day, a chance to have the right equipment, whether it's inflatables or whatever. And I will deal with the Berea Police Department to try to get their boat back, but I think it's a old wooden boat, and I don't think they use it. The other thing is, I've talked to the fire department in depth, and there hasn't been this kind of activity in the 30 years he worked for the department. But he can tell you the difference is today, Wallace Lake is being used more than ever, and the conversion from canoes to kayaks have made a big difference. So the last page is a picture of my son, and all I can say is, at 6'9 and 220, and leader of the Mustang basketball team to multi-championships, he was in great shape, and he was a good swimmer, but it was hypothermia from where the water was that did him in. So I appreciate your time. I think you got, hopefully, if you have any questions for me, I'd be more than glad to answer those.
No, you've been very thorough.
Can I ask one question? With respect to swimming safety, do you think that should be cordoned off, the area where the where it falls off quickly when you enter the water?
Two things you can do. One is you can put buoys in there with the depth change.
Mm-hmm.
Because the depth change quickly in some areas, when I looked at the map you did in 2017, they go 5 feet and then they just go 35 feet. And from the pictures, you see how the walls were built.
Just straight, sure.
Yeah. I would say I would not allow swimming in any part of that lake except for the beach area. We know the depth of the beach area. We have lifeguards there. And the family that was lost because they went to the edge to fish, just like I took my kids to the fishing derby since they were this high. And fortunately, I have three sons and they're all, I'm the shortest. But we, as I say, we went to the fishing derby every year, but these people went fishing and it got hot, so they started to go in the water. And from what I was told, I mean, they started to get into deeper and it got mucky, and then all of a sudden they were under. And the father went to save.
We know the story there.
You know the story. Any questions?
Brian, would buoys be something that could be done, or should it just be no swimming, or should it be experienced swimming only signs or something like that?
I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, the complexity of what you're asking is it falls in the legal realm of open waters. You know, this was a riparian built system, and certainly my sympathy goes out to you and your family. It truly does. You know, having been in Milwaukee County and followed rivers, streams, and lakes, you know, the same tenor. And as you mentioned, there are multiple lakes, you know, across all boundaries. You know, having said that, you know, to preclude swimming is you can't stop that. You know, what we always try to promote is, you know, education, you know, as a youth, learning how to swim. There are folks that enter the water that don't know how to actually swim. And we've had some tragedies relative to that. And we know that from their parents, they didn't know how to swim. And so, you know, any life lost, you know, in the Park District is something we take very personally. Having said that, you know, identifying some of those, it's that area isn't necessarily conducive to it. You know, we do have a designated area, you know, off of the beach. So, you know, we will continue to look at things. I like your suggestion on the boat idea. I truly do. So I think there's some things that we can look at, and that's what I can say to it at this point.
Good.
Brian, if I could make a suggestion to you, I'd be more than glad to meet with the Mayor Berea. I'm good friends with the mayor of Middleburg Heights too, and believe it or not, Middleburg Heights was part of the original quarry. We actually worked together, and we had worked on insurmountable problems. You know Mike Catan. I was his project coordinator for the football stadium when no one else would vote for a football stadium. I've done some other things. I've worked with many mayors in the area. I run Randall Park Mall, Farmertown Mall, Westgate Mall, Midway Mall, and you learn all about the cities. But I think in this area, it's a little different than, say, Ranger Lake, because of the fact that was a quarry and the depths are unknown. And then that also causes the temperatures. Water at 35 feet is much colder than water at 6 feet. But I've taken enough time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else? Thank you again.
We will move into the final few items. We have with us this morning Judy McKeegan for a history moment on William Stinchco. Judy?
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, commissioners. In trying to decide what to talk about this month, I was looking back and I realized that I had done a talk about There we go. I'm doing the same thing. About our first executive director, William Stinchcomb. But when I looked up when I did this for you, it was 8 years ago. So I thought maybe, especially as we acknowledge Brian's continuing leadership of the park, it might be time to go back and talk about this first guy here, William Stinchcomb. And there he is looking all serious, as he will do throughout this presentation. So including here. So this is William Stinchcomb, William Albert Stinchcomb, born in 1878 and grew up on Denison near what is now West 94th Street. And I know, I love that he's just serious even in this. Brian challenged me one time to find a picture of him smiling. There actually is one. He's with his fellow Masons and their little hats and stuff, but I just don't have it on this one. I put this in here, just note that when he was growing up in that area, that's his house there that's circled, and you can see the yellow is houses. So you can see they're starting to fill in, but really when he was born, that area was still kind of rural. So he was watching the city as it filled in and grew. And I think that may have had a lot to do with his later decisions about parklands. Here's the interesting fact about him. He left school after 10th grade. He did not even graduate high school. Nowadays that would not be, he would not have been in the position he was. But I can tell you from having read much of his words, he was a very, very well-educated man. He was hired on as a surveyor draftsman by the city of Cleveland at the age of 17, 18 years old. His father was a city councilman, so that may have had a little bit of reason why he was able to get in there. Learned engineering because he wanted to be a civil engineer on the job and through correspondence courses. That's the place right there where he went to school in Pennsylvania. And a little bit about his personal interests. He was a singer all of his life. Judy, he and his son Tom, yes.
Was the tuition $2 a month?
You know what? It does say $2 a month, and I'm not even sure, Commissioner Moore, if that was actually when he was going or if that was like a little bit later. I just found their advertisement. So, you know, he may have even paid less when he went. Who knows? Yeah, I know. Well, different times, right? So he was a singer all his life. This is he and his son, Tom, who was later the mayor of Berea, in the Orpheus Men's Chorus. They were basses. His granddaughter Laura has a beautiful voice too. One of the first things that I found out about him in his diaries is that he was performing in a production of the Mikado at the YMCA in Cleveland when he was 18, and he was very worried that they didn't have enough rehearsals and they were going to embarrass themselves. So you could see even at 18 he was very focused. He was interested in photography when it was a fairly new hobby for people to have. He even mentioned in his diary one time that it was also an expensive hobby. He was trying to learn how to enlarge pictures. So these are some of his early pictures. I love this one. Okay, so this is Mr. Stinchcomb and his daughter Betty standing in the doorway of their home over on in Edgewater, right near Edgewater. And they are greeting Mr. Stinchcomb and his daughter Betty coming to the door. He literally photoshopped that. I mean, like cut and paste, you could see the line. So he set up this shot he would have such fun with all the stuff we can do now. Yeah, I just think he would. And there's a selfie that he took of himself early on. It looks like he's sitting, I don't know, somewhere and doing that. This is Laura's favorite picture of her grandfather. He was one of the early people to be interested in cars. He bought an automobile in 1905. Said he went to pick it up at the gentleman's home, a person he was buying it from. It was a Nash Rambler. This is not it, but this is what it would have looked like. He took a half hour to learn how to drive because he'd never driven an automobile before. Drove it home, went to pull it into the shed, and promptly almost went through the back of the shed in his father's house, and decided to save the shed. He would fix up a winching system so he could putt, 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 slow down, go into the driveway, and then winch it in the rest of the way into the car and save the back of the shed from possible damage. again, this is just the way his mind works. It's just amazing to me. Of course, his beginning of his involvements with parks was in 1901 when the mayor, Tom Johnson, asked him to become city parks engineer. This is the Cleveland City Parks at the time, not our metro parks there. And of course, he famously said, well, I don't know anything about parks. And Johnson said, good, you'll learn. Which he did. But of course, he actually did know a little bit about parks. If nothing else, he knew how to go to them. This is Brookside Park. One of his first big major projects was to create this lake at Brookside. That was the dancing pavilion at Brookside, by the way, there.
Can you go back one?
Sure.
That's Stone Brook, right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
So he created this this lake, helped to design, and was at the grand opening in 1902 of this lake at Brookside, which we now know as our waterfowl lake. Interestingly, that building there was the dancing pavilion, and it's about in the same spot where our Stillwater is now. So I think that's kind of cool. And this was his basically his home park. He used to take his bicycle with his sweetheart, Annie Mae, and they would ride their bikes into Brookside Park, which is where he proposed to her. And there's a picture of them. It's faded over the years, but that's him and May.
Kind of smoke.
She's left.
And this is what was in the newspaper when they got married. Childhood lovers wed. Miss May Long becomes the wife of City Parks engineer. And they went off to Niagara Falls to get married. With their family. They weren't eloping. Their parents went with them, too. And this is a picture of the family. So that's them. Again, I have a feeling he set that up and timed it and took the shot himself. But it could have been. So, whoops. Did I go backwards? No. And, of course, one of the things that influenced his design capabilities was he went to lots of the world's fairs. So when he built the Edgewater Bathhouse in 1912, he was very influenced by that kind of architecture.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, Judy, that was at that time, there was no sewage treatment for Cleveland sewer. What was it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's right around the same time. That's in 1912. We're beginning to get the sewer treatment centers.
Yeah, but they were combined.
What's that?
They were combined. The rain was
supposed
to clean them out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was the idea. You just put stuff in the water, the lake, it'll just float away. So, oops, went backwards. So, of course, we know famously in 1905, in his report, he looked at this ring of city parks and says, we need an outer ring. And he was so lyrical in his report that the newspaper said he was a new nature author. Because he talked about babbling brooks and rustling leaves. And it was very, very poetic. I love when engineers are poetic. Meanwhile, of course, he left the city parks. And while this idea was percolating for a metropolitan park district, he did a few other things, like built the Detroit Superior Bridge, was very involved in local politics, ran for mayor in 1917, was debating here. This is him voting, presumably for himself. Those were voting booths back then. They were corrugated. Yeah, they would set these corrugated tin things up for voting booths. He didn't win, which is to our advantage, because then when the Metro Park started, there he is in our 1917, our first annual report in the middle. And if you could read, it says he is consulting engineer. His first work for until 21 when he became executive director secretary was pro bono. So he also is our first volunteer. Work that in, Lynn. Thank you. Of course, we're skipping over now. Many, many years of service here. Very hands-on, of course, in his approach to being the director of the Metro Parks. There he is with Mr. A.B. Williams. And there he is literally being hands-on. This was a three-day ride. This young lady was part of a group of people that rode their horses from South Chagrin, from the polo fields to Rocky River one year, and then the next year they did it backwards. It was a three-day ride. You can see how he's getting up there in years. They had to keep moving the making an exemption for the retirement age, the mandatory retirement age for him, because he just literally would not retire. But he finally did. His health, he was leaving the building one night and collapsed in 1957 and had to retire. This is the lovely plaque that was given to him. Actually, Laura Strauss, his granddaughter, gave this back to us, to the park. So it's in our archives, hanging on the wall.
How old was he when he died?
He was, let me do the math. Let's see, he was born in 78 and he died in 50, like January 59, 78, 79. Yeah, I think he was 79. And then, of course, the first thing we did here in the park is to try to create a wonderful memorial to him. Supposedly, he did not want any kind of memorial. He said, just have people come have a picnic and maybe play some music. Well, today we do those things up at his memorial. But this is them working on the design for this Stinchcomb Memorial, which looks very 1950s as opposed to 1870s when he was born, I think. But we did a beautiful job of sprucing this up as part of our centennial year. And it really is a lovely spot to go up there now. But this is his final tribute that I think is wonderful. This is him and his wife, Annie Mae, who they were married, for over 50 years. And on his last birthday, this is the card she gave him. It says, "Hi, honey. Every time I think of you, you make my head spin. Deed you do. Love, Mae." To me, that is the measure of a man. No matter what he did for the city, the community, everything he did, all of the friends he made, all of the admiration that he garnered, I think to have this woman who literally knew him all her life, to say this to him, that is the measure of a good person. And one of his, that's the picture of him smiling. That's what I told Brian, but Brian said that was more of a smirk. So I don't know. So one of his obituaries, one of the tributes said, called him a practical dreamer. And I think that is so apropos, right? He was poetic. He had the dream, but he was an engineer. He was practical. He knew how to get things done. I have lots of ideas, but I don't have the practical side. So this man had it all. So ladies and gentlemen, William Albert Stinchcomb, practical dreamer. Thank you.
That is going to be a tough act to follow, but I know Dr. Lucas and Chris are up to this, the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo Gorilla Conservation Update. I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brian. Good morning, Commissioners. And Judy, that was really cool. Thank you so much for that. Well, it's my pleasure to talk to you today about the zoo's Gorilla Conservation Program, specifically about the work we're doing to strengthen conservation leaders and develop early career scientists. We are, as an organization, completely committed to nature conservation. It's a wonderful thing. We feel it, we breathe it, we live it every day here. And the zoo's Future for Wildlife Conservation Program is the international extension of that. So this is the work that we do around the globe. We've been doing this work since 1995, and over the years have contributed more than $10 million to field conservation. And I'm proud to say that just in the last three of the last four years, we've been able to contribute at least $700,000 a year. So that's a sizable contribution. And as part of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, or AZA, we are making a big difference. The AZA members as a whole collectively contribute $217 million a year to wildlife conservation. So taken together, that makes us pretty much the largest conservation organization around, because it adds up to $1 billion every 5 years. So when we are focusing on the work we do, we try to have attention to these three pillars. We first and foremost need to help protect wildlife. Secondly, we want to make sure that what we're doing is grounded in really good science and that we're promoting science as a way of managing. And then finally, capacity building. And this refers mostly to the work that we do to support people, but it can also involve any chance that we get to build up or give others an opportunity to do better and do more. So of course, this is exactly in line with what we are doing here as Cleveland Metro Parks. And it helps us then to drive and think about what the partners that we want to have. So many of you know that Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund has been our partner for many years. We actually first started supporting them in 2003, but they've been our primary gorilla conservation partner since 2014 when we got more involved. And once again, the alignment is beautiful. First and foremost, protecting gorillas. Secondly, investing in the science that's needed to inform conservation. Next, capacity building so that we can sustain the work and continue to invest in the people that are moving things forward. And then finally, supporting and empowering communities through livelihood, food security, and education programs is a huge part of what the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund does. We also do and support many of that, and that's an area that we'd like to grow in the future. But today I really want to focus on capacity building, because this is the area that's a niche for Cleveland Metro Park Zoo in the zoo conservation landscape and in the international landscape. Basically, we have a long history of investing in people and really looking to make that our signature way of engaging with our partners to have a strong impact. So I want to just back up for a moment and say, why gorillas? I mean, you know, they're gorillas, so why not, of course, but there's more to it than that. And why capacity building? I think it's important to always keep in mind that gorillas are the guardians of their forests. And these are some of the most biodiverse places on Earth, and they are our best natural defenses against climate change. And I love this photo because it looks like he is literally standing there guarding the forest. And on a broader perspective, the forests are the lungs of the planet, right? These are the natural areas that are absorbing carbon and reducing the carbon dioxide buildup in the atmosphere. And this is an essential weapon when we're dealing with increasing warming of the planet. So when we preserve forests and we help support the people who are doing that work to protect gorillas and those ecosystems, it is not just helping the people that live around those places, but it's contributing to the health of the entire planet. Now, one of the things that's become more and more clear is that for us to globally to have an impact in conservation that's going to be needed and the time that we need to do it, we need to strengthen scientific capacity and center African biodiversity research in Africa. It's not enough for Americans and Europeans to be receiving the resources that are needed to do this work. Investments need to be made in Africa. We know, for example, that fewer than 1% of the global researchers are African, as compared to 18% from North America and 24% from the EU. When it comes to scientific publications, less than 2% come from sub-Saharan Africa, compared to 23% from North America and 35% from Europe. So not only that, but in the entire continent of Africa, there are only 1,600 universities compared to 5,300 in the United States alone. So we are part of, Cleveland Metro Park Zoo is part of the movement that is investing in scientific capacity in Africa with the intent of strengthening leadership and conservation. So this is important in Rwanda because of the history there with the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi, but also the government itself is promoting internships, and this is something we're able to align with, really looking at advanced graduate study to improve the number of PhDs that are coming out of Rwanda. And this is something that is, you know, basically going to be essential as they continue to move forward. So in partnering with the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund, back in 2014, we identified a niche for Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. Because we do so much work with Case Western Reserve University, Cleveland State, Ohio State University, in training students in science, this was a great place for us to align. So their capacity building is focused on students, interns, and staff. And our program that I'm going to focus on today over the next 5 minutes is really in these areas. So we'll focus on the memoirs program, which was our initial launch in investing in students, how we've worked with interns, and now some of the work that I've been doing just in the last year or two and continuing this year. So I've talked before about the Memoirs Program, but this is our primary partnership in supporting the undergraduate students from the University of Rwanda who come through the FOSSE Fund to get training in research in their senior year. Our zoo provides both technical support and training, but also training in soft skills, like how to give a good presentation or how to network at a conference, how to write grants. And then of those students, then we, most of them go on to careers in education, conservation, or science. And many, of the 10 that we do each year, there is a total of 3 or 4 that get selected to become professional interns, which I'll talk about in just a moment. But I think it's really impressive that since 2003, we've had 155 students go through this program. And I want to call out and thank Noah Dunham is our research curator at the zoo. And I'm looking for Mara. Maybe Mara was, no, Mara's right here. Mara is one of our newest PhD students. And I was ended up having a health issue back in November. And at the last minute, I couldn't go to do the training here in Rwanda. And so they stepped up, went out, and not only did a phenomenal job working with this class of students, but also have made some really significant improvements in what we've been doing. So I'm really proud of my team for that. They have a wonderful time. It's a great way to help the students get beyond what they learn in the classroom to really learn from the conservation professionals. And since our involvement started in 2014, we have trained 81 undergraduates through this program. Thinking again about the pipeline, the next step then is for those who have done a really good job to be taken on at the FOSSE Fund to do an internship. So this is a really great learning opportunity for them. They're basically, it's required by the government, so it's filling a need. And the students that get selected for this are able to do all kinds of work. They can work in the lab. These are some of our students that just came back, or interns that had just come back from the field. They were beaming, you know, with happiness for the opportunity to do that. All three of these have been hired on as FOSSE Fund staff, by the way, as research assistants. And this was during my last visit in February. Those are for our 4 newest interns, and 2 of them are working on measuring the growth of plants that are at the new Ellen campus. So I'm so proud to say that we have funded 21 interns to date, and they are the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo interns. So switching gears a little bit to some of the work now that I'm doing with the staff, and again, this became one of those areas that the FOSSE Fund said, look, we really need some help here with our team, because now that we have this new campus, we are growing, the visibility is growing of people coming to see us, our team needs to grow with this. So I've been was with the support of Metro Parks, and I'm so grateful for this. Edie Ricciuto had originally been coaching me on Gallup Strengths, and last year I was able to take the course and become a certified strengths coach myself. The Clifton Strengths approach is aimed at looking at what a person naturally does well and investing in that. And so it's a wonderful way to start understanding how teams are have different abilities and strengths. And then once you know that, once you understand your strengths, you can gain appreciation for it and then learn how to apply it either to solve problems or to reach goals. And so these are the types of, this is the type of work that I've been doing with them. Dr. Tara Stawinski, the president and CEO, has said her favorite part about this is that it gives them a common language to talk about. So now they can really start to understand, oh, you know, I have strategic, I'm very strategic, and so do you. And so now we can talk a little bit about that. Or I can say, you know, I understand one of your greatest strengths is consistency. So I try to respect that when I work with you, because I know that that's important to you. This isn't just a nice feel-good thing to do. There is 50 years of data from the Gallup organization demonstrates that people who focus on their strengths are 3 times more likely to report having an excellent quality of life, and they're 6 times more likely to be engaged at work. So far, I have 64 of the FOSSE Fund team members have completed strengths assessments, and I have completed at least 1, if not 2 coaching sessions, individual coaching sessions with 54 team members, and I'm scheduling the final 10 over the next few weeks. Finally, I wanted to talk just a little bit about the work that we're doing to support and empower women in conservation. Again, gender equity is essential, and it's something that the country of Rwanda is focusing on more and more. November of 2021, the FOSSI Fund engaged in some really excellent gender equity training that I was able to be a part of. And I started to see the opportunities that we had to begin to invest in women in science and education. I am on the chair of the board of the FOSSI Fund, and I also chair the Science and Education Committee. And last year, we launched a Women in Science and Education Fund to promote these professional development opportunities. And one of the first jobs that I had last year when I went to meet with the women was to ask them, what would you like to do with this? We have these funds. How can we help you? And I remember Tara saying, you know, I asked them and they don't really have, they're not really thinking. So if you could help them get going. Well, of course, it just took some one-on-one conversations with these women, talking about their strengths. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And one of the first things that they really wanted to focus on was increasing the number of staff, of course. And the last Gorilla Journal that was published by the FOSSI Fund highlights all the work that's going on now, focusing on women. But the next thing was they really wanted to start having women's meetings to provide support for one another. So during my individual one-on-ones with the women in June of 2022, I asked each of them if they could nominate some of the women that they would like to take a leadership role. And these three amazing women, Kadiera runs the Conservation Gallery. This is Kadiera. Nadia is in finance and operations, and Nadia, who was in a dark room at the time, I apologize for that picture, is one of the research assistants. So they represent different arms of the organization, and they wanted to take a leadership role but had no idea how. So I started with the Lean In organization. Leanin.org has really nice guidelines for how to do lean in circles for women in the work environment. So I started there, started coaching them. I meet with them about every other week. And so far we've had the sixth women's empowerment meeting actually was this morning. So it was like at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning for us, but it was 8 o'clock in the morning their time. But this is just a nice picture of the very first meeting. I gave the keynote speech to this smaller group. And over time now, this is the last one I was able to attend in person in February. And the whole focus of these meetings is to increase trust among the women, let them get to know one another, and to start building skills that will help them in their profession. So what's next? I'll be going with the trifecta to the Women Deliver Conference. This is a global conference that just happens to be taking place in Rwanda in July, early July. So I'll be attending that with the women, where we're very excited to get some new ideas and see some additional role models and learn about how what else we can do. And then about a week later, in the same city of Kigali, Rwanda, the International Conservation Biology Conference is taking place. And I'm speaking in a symposium focused on zoos and conservation. I'll be focusing on how we are strengthening individual and team capacity at the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund to maximize conservation impact. So you all are aware that we have a visible presence through our Cleveland Metro Park Zoo Interpretive Trail sign at the campus, and it is my absolute pleasure to continue to represent Cleveland Metro Park Zoo on a personal level. I want to say thank you to Brian, the commissioners, everybody in HR in particular, for all the excellent training we get here at Cleveland Metro Parks, because what I've learned is that that is one of the biggest gifts that I can contribute, is just some of these ways, whether it's crucial conversations, whether it's, you know, other leadership strategies, it's been essential in my work, and they are so grateful for our support. So Murakoze Chani, it's thank you, and Kinyarwanda. I really hope you can all go visit the campus someday, but I appreciate your time today. Thank you. Any questions?
We're good.
2023 Cleveland Metro Parks Volunteer Services Report. Lynn is extremely excited about bringing this forward. I have to again thank our Board of Park Commissioners. Let's give them a round of applause, as they are volunteers as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here today. It's the most perfect week for me to present, so thank you. And I also want to say thank you for donating your time and expertise leading our organization. So there we go. I'd like to give you our volunteer services update. All of you have our annual report in front of you. And as you can see, we had a phenomenal year. 5,492 volunteers donated their time to Cleveland Metro Parks. And that's 5,492 community members who not only enjoy our parks, not only go to the zoo, but they take the next step to actively be involved in continuing our mission. And it's amazing the different ways that they support our organization wholeheartedly. And as you can see by the smiles on their face, it brings them so much joy to be part of our organization. And we appreciate them so much. Oh, I timed that pretty good, huh? So here's a cross-section of our numbers, the pre-COVID number of 5,700 volunteers contributing time. And of course, in COVID year, 1,800. But then we bounced back up in 2021 to where we are now. So we are almost back to pre-COVID numbers. This is 2022, so I would have to say we are back, and we are back strongly. Here's a cross section of the two types of volunteers that we have. We have our ongoing volunteers in blue, and those are the volunteers that are with us on a regular basis, monthly, weekly, even daily, James at the zoo, daily. And the green number, those are our episodic and group volunteers. So obviously the big dip in COVID year for, you know, companies and organizations didn't want to gather. So we jumped up in 2021 to 2,400, and then to 2022, 83% increase in volunteers. That's huge. If we continue along this path, we're going to have to get creative to be able to accommodate these volunteer requests. So we had an amazing year. Volunteer engagement is at an all-time high. Last year, we had a record number of group volunteer projects, 262 completed projects. As of yesterday, we have 150 group volunteer projects already, and it's only April. In fact, one of our very large sponsors, Cross Country Mortgage, reached out to us, and they requested group projects for 1,000 of their employees. We smiled and said, mm-hmm. Like I said, we're going to get creative. We're going to get creative. So, but I do want to point out Maddie Howard. She's our new engagement manager. She is doing an excellent job fulfilling those requests and getting back to people. So we're happy to have her on board. Also, last year, we had a record number of new ongoing volunteers joining us, 427, huge number. And then a record attendance at our appreciation events, at our zoo breakfast, at our TA breakfast, huge support. And then at our annual event, which we hold at the zoo in the fall, more than 800 volunteers joined us. So they're pretty engaged. And if those numbers weren't proof of volunteer engagement, we also worked with marketing for our 2022 volunteer engagement survey. And of our 1,500 ongoing volunteers that we presented it to, over 800, almost 900 of them responded to their survey. And you can ask Beth in marketing, that's a huge return. So we're very happy that they wanted to share their thoughts with us and their ideas. And we listened to them. 94% of them would recommend Cleveland Metro Parks to a friend as a place to volunteer. 90% feel they're making a positive contribution to our mission, which is the number one reason why they choose to volunteer with us. And 91% feel that they receive training, great training for their volunteer activities. And these numbers continue to rise year after year. And that's, of course, due to my amazing team, but also due to the 50 plus employees that oversee their day-to-day activities. So we thank them so much. And on the back of our annual report, you can see all the different departments that oversee volunteers, such as natural resources, who 1,300 volunteers given almost 13,000 hours towards their goals. I know it's a little dizzying, but so cool. Outdoor experiences, 16,000 hours were donated to their programming. And park operations, of course, the folks that really help us with, you know, those group volunteer projects, 11,000 hours, 2,800 volunteers. And those are just a few. that support us. And it's unbelievable how many departments throughout Cleveland Metro Parks provide these meaningful opportunities for community members to become involved in what we do, with even the legal department. Thanks, Rose. And golf. I mean, they can't operate without the help and support of our volunteers. So that's hugely important to this organization. So thank you all for welcoming them with open arms. And next, I'd like to highlight two of our largest programs. First up is our zoo volunteer program. They've given the zoo ambassadors have given them 41,429 hours in 2022. That's huge. James Bluer, who runs that program, does an amazing job developing with various departments meaningful assignments that truly help the departments at the zoo. They have needs, and he's there to help fill them. So I appreciate his work towards that. He's welcomed 59 new zoo ambassadors in 2022, and he is currently bringing in 91 new ones this year. So he's been busy, a lot of interest. Everyone wants to support this organization, and it's so wonderful to see. And then also, he's revamped some programs with conservation education and conservation science, like our docent. I knew I was going to mess that up. Our docent program and other very helpful programs that he's helped develop and bring back. And next up is our trail ambassador program, where our trail ambassadors assisted over 4,000 guests in 2022. And that's anything from helping them with directions or providing first aid or giving them an update on a project that's happening in their park. These volunteers, without them, 4,000 people would go without questions answered, without giving that extra special attention that, you know, provides them with a wonderful experience. So we so appreciate the trail ambassadors. And to make sure that they are aware and can answer those park questions adequately, Kelly Sadowski, who runs this program, does an excellent job of listening to them and asking them what they want to learn about. And she provides these continuing education opportunities. And so in addition to providing them with the knowledge they need, it adds that key component of being social, because a lot of them go out in pairs. So they don't get to, you know, be around a lot of people. And, you know, that social aspect is a huge reason why volunteers choose to volunteer. So she came up with meetups where they get to learn and talk with each other. And they're so popular that the last three of them filled up within an hour, right? One of them within an hour. So it was a need that was there, and we filled it, and it's awesome. And we're looking forward to continuing that this year as well. And then here's an interesting fact I wanted to share with you. So 410 incident reports were submitted by trail ambassadors, and that includes general maintenance issues, such as a tree down in the middle of the trail, like in that photo, policy violations like dogs off leash, safety concerns, guest feedback. And those reports with valuable information are shared with our park managers so they can go out and know where, because they can't be out on every trail at every given time. So they'll know, oh, perfect, we got to get somebody out there, you know, for the policy violations. Hey, if there's an area that we're seeing a lot of, you know, dogs off leash, or, you know, vandalized property, things like that, we'll let the police know so they can go out and, you know, take care of that as well. We inform our risk management if there's any safety concerns, and marketing, any department that would be concerned and could use this valuable information. All right, so also in 2022, we continued to focus on our goals of welcoming, engaging, and sustaining volunteers from all locations, from all abilities. And last year, we focused on community volunteer events to engage certain communities. So we focused on Garfield Park. And we partnered with Natural Resources and Youth Outdoors to provide an educational opportunity, hands-on, to plant trees with students from Esperanza. Esperanza is an organization focused on Hispanic educational opportunities, supporting families and students. And Esperanza, meaning hope is the only organization like this in the state of Ohio that focuses on the achievements and advancements of Hispanic students. So we were very lucky to partner with them, and we look forward to continuing this partnership in the future. And the other two events in Garfield Park were geared towards engaging Garfield Park users. So we partnered with, again, with Natural Resources with tree planting, and they did an amazing job of grassroots efforts, pardon the pun, of advertising it, you know, with flyers, with the A-frame signage on the trails, and literally walking up to park users and say, hey, feel like coming over and helping us plant a tree. It was such a fun way to engage the community directly like that. And then they get to come back and they get to see their tree year after year. Like, yeah, I planted that. I'm part of this park. So they're, you know, taking on ownership of the park and becoming involved. And that was the very way that we wanted to start introducing volunteering through efforts like this, and perhaps engaging them for future opportunities and some long-term volunteering opportunities. And so we're going to continue those partnerships this year, but also making new connections, like the Monarch Center for Autism. We're participating in their transition education program, where it's students age 14 to 21, and they're taught job on the job skills. And after this program, when they graduate, they will be hopefully competitively considered for positions throughout Northeast Ohio. And because so many of those students have an interest in outdoor work, they came to us and we came up with a plan for an ongoing opportunity for students and their job coaches to go out on a regular basis and help keep our parks free of debris. So it's a wonderful partnership, and thanks to the legal department of putting that document together so we can move forward with this. So we're very excited for this to move forward. And then lastly, I'd like to talk about the hugely successful pilot year of the employee volunteer program. We completed 12 projects last year, and 146 employees participated and gave 415 hours to communities throughout Northeast Ohio. And we worked with marketing to provide this most perfect logo, which is on the shirt, and each one of you received that shirt. So thank you for caring about our community. So this program provided, come on, I have this, there we go. Okay, so this program allowed staff members to build relationships with each other, you know, departments that they may not come in contact with on a regular basis. So it was nice to allow them to spend some time with other departments, and then it allowed them to build relationships with community organizations. And these employees worked as teams to complete tasks and make a true impact in the community. And it was fun. It was fun. We had fun in these projects. And volunteering is known to lower stress levels. There's studies, thank you, Mayo Clinic, makes you live longer. And it truly is a way for an outlet. So all of these employees came back refreshed and ready to go. So I'd love to show you some of the organizations we supported, like the Greater Cleveland Food Bank. We helped them a couple times. The City of Parma and Garfield Heights, we helped refresh a few of their playgrounds.
Can you vote for me?
Yes. Camp Cheerful, we helped with their horse stables, painting that area. MedWish, we sorted medical supplies that were on their way to Ukraine. And we helped at the Cleveland APL, which we pulled weeds, invasive species, so we can, so the dogs have a place to play. And the Kids Book Bank, where we sorted donations for children around Northeast Ohio. And we had a team at the Browns game, the Cleveland Steelers game, where they were helping to sell raffle tickets. And 100% of those proceeds went to the Shoes and Clothes for Kids. So it was wonderfully, wonderfully satisfying to be part of these, of supporting these organizations. And we are already well into our 2023 employee volunteer program with overwhelming support from staff, which was absolutely amazing. Many of these are already filled. So maybe we add more. But we look to continually do this year after year because we want to provide employees with an engagement opportunity as well as the time, because many of them may not have a lot of free time to do this, but the time to get out and support their community. So thank you again to our commissioners, our leadership team, and to our staff for truly supporting our department and providing opportunities for volunteers, because they are our community members, and you know, we really appreciate them. Do we have any here still? No, not anymore, but thank you. Any questions? Chance?
The next info item we have is Karen's Way Nature Play Area. Sean, would you like to introduce? Please.
Good morning again, commissioners. Very happy this morning to tag team this presentation with Amanda Meyer. Amanda, if you wouldn't mind coming up. Amanda is new landscape architect with Cleveland Metro Parks, been with us about 4 months. She had over a decade of experience with Banky, and before that lived in California working for Disney, Universal Studios. So a great foundation of knowledge that she brings to the park. So with that, we're going to give a quick update on the Karen's Way play space in Huntington Reservation. This is yet another nature influenced or play space that we're bringing to the park. You've seen what we've been able to do at Edgewater with Lindsay Family Play Space, in Brecksville at Harriet Keeler, and then also Garfield Pond, or I'm sorry, at Garfield Park. Here specifically, we're at Huntington, and we are going to continue to bring forward the improvements at Huntington that we've seen in the past few years. So here we've got the Noshery and the Sunset Picnic Garden that were completed in 2021, along with the conversion of what was the absolute worst restrooms in the park district to now the best. So with that, we're now concentrating on bringing more amenities and partnering with development, who has a very gracious donor who will be bringing the funds that will make this project possible. So Amanda's gonna walk us through.
The bottom, yeah.
Hello, thank you for having me. Such an honor to be here and such a great project to start with here at the Metro Parks. This is the beloved swing set by the community. Sarah can attest to that as a Bay Village resident. Before I started the design on this project, I met with the park manager at Edgewater, as well as kind of observed the nature play spaces at Brecksville and Garfield. So this space will be a hybrid of both nature play and, and also some structures. We will make sure that we incorporate swings once again. This is a list of the play components. But we'll make sure that we will have swings. I think we're also incorporating a zip line, which I think and believe will be a hit for this space. The spaces will be divided into toddler and ages 5 to 12. There'll be an embankment slide, some water play with hand pumps. I'll move over to the space. And the form of the space was kind of developed by the existing trees. We're doing our best to lessen the impact and maintain those beautiful iconic trees. The space will, The space will enter off of where the restrooms are, and then you'll come through a concrete ADA path of travel, which will lead you through the space to the picnic area and the nursery on top there. This will also serve as a maintenance trailway. The 2 to 5 year play area will be where the water play is. And then there's a separate toddler swing set down there. And then the tree is kind of a natural element there that kind of divides the spaces for 5 to 12 play, where the zip line is to the south there. And then there will also be a swing set over towards the sunset picnic area with various play elements around that tree as well. And the construction is to begin the summer, and it's slated to be completed this fall. So, any questions?
Can you add an adult swing?
Well, The 5 to 12. It'll be a combination.
Okay, it's not a...
Yeah, it'll
different
be...
Different
age. And I should also mention that there will be inclusive swings as well as on the zip line, there'll be an inclusive seat.
Awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Excellent updates. That is the last information briefing item. The next regularly scheduled meeting is May 18th. Again, this is at Lookabout Lodge. Wade, will that be the audit as well? Or so audit committee will meet at 7, so there will be limited access to the building until the meeting starts at 8 o'clock.
Yes.
We do have an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Seconded. Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Debbie Berry.
Yes. And there's two votes, and that is enough for us to go into executive session. Dan Moore will be joining us once he comes back in, so he'll, but we're sufficient to go into executive session.
Perfect.
Thank you all. That concludes our business on which we would be voting. Have a good day.
Enjoy the sun.
We're back.
No
other business to conduct, and I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.